In the 1950s, jam sessions were a popular part of the New York jazz scene, a way for musicians to practice, collaborate, and create. And in one particular space, a loft building in Manhattan's Flower District, these sessions were captured on tape and in photos by a former Life photographer named W. Eugene Smith. He left behind a vast collection of work that was completely lost to the public until recently. In 2009, Sarah Fischko, an award-winning radio host and producer, wrote, produced, and hosted the Jazz Loft Project radio series for WMIC and NPR. And last year, she made her movie directorial debut with the Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith, a WMIC Studios original. We spoke about it last November when the film was being screened as part of the Doc NYC Festival. Tomorrow, it's receiving its theatrical and online debut at the Metrograph, followed by a digital release on Friday, October 7th. And I'm very pleased that it brings Sarah Fischko back to our show. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Did you ever imagine during your long career in radio that you would ever direct a film?
Well, you know, I had been a film editor before I threw things into radio on a full-time basis. I'd spent many years editing documentaries. So I can't say that it was as remote as it might have been if I had never had a career at all in the movies. So
you had to comb through many, many hours of tape for this film. Was there a particular piece of tape, one artifact from the archive that really surprised you?
Well, the one that sucked me into the project in the first place was the Thelonious Monk material, which Sam Stevenson, who was the originator of the project, played for me in about, 2005 or so. He played me a tape of Monk just walking around in circles and mumbling. And
this was at the Jazz Loft?
At the Jazz Loft. Monk spent 3 weeks there rehearsing for the Town Hall 1959 concert with Hall Overton, who lived at the loft or worked at the loft. And there was just something incredibly seductive about hearing his loud footsteps on these old wooden floors of this dusty, dingy place that I just had to know more, you know.
Should we be surprised that someone as prominent in jazz as Thelonious Monk would have even been at the Jazz Loft? Were other famous musicians there?
Many famous musicians, but that's one of the fascinations of the Loft, is that it was a mixture of people you never heard of, but it was such a popular place to play that everybody sort of dropped by at one time or another.
I mean, word of mouth brought them there?
Absolutely, word of mouth. They all played gigs in the same clubs, and they would play gigs, you know, late at night and finish at whatever it was, 1, 2 in the morning or 11, whenever it was. And they'd be all excited. They'd want to play more, so they'd go to the Jazz Loft.
Nothing like that happens anymore.
I know.
Do you think there's been a loss for jazz?
I think jazz is different, and I think it needs different things. I think that was what jazz needed then.
Where is the loft located?
821 6th Avenue, between 28th and 29th Street.
And was there one person responsible for turning it in from an abandoned space into a magnet for jazz musicians?
Well, initially, yes, it was a painter named David X. Young, who had a lot of friends who were jazz musicians. He got a space there to paint in, but he thought, wouldn't it be fun to have some jazz there? So he got an upright piano moved in there and a drum kit. And that was really all you needed because everybody else brought their instruments, and that's got it started.
And since it was a business area, people could play far into the night and not worry about disturbing local residents.
Yeah, it was completely dead at night. The Flower Market closed up at about 5, 6 o'clock.
So what does W. Eugene Smith come into this story? He was a photographer for Life magazine, seemed to be enjoying an enviable career. Why do you think that he wanted to leave all that behind?
Smith was a really extraordinarily celebrated character in the time that he was at Life. He was not only a photographer, but a photo essayist, and he really kind of perfected this art of sequencing photographs and telling stories with still photographs, which was very popular at the time. But as is the case with many artists, and he really was an artist, he wanted to control his work. And in the end, Life magazine didn't want to give him the kind of control that he felt he wanted.
But then he left his family. Was he unhappy at home?
He felt hemmed in as an artist, and he felt that he couldn't juggle the kind of devotion that a family required with the kind of devotion and obsession, really, that he had with his work. He was a very obsessive person.
He abandoned his family and burdened them with a lot of debt. Were you conflicted at all about how you felt about Smith?
Of course. I think everybody who's worked on the project is conflicted about that part of it, except that it's not a question of really even how we feel about Smith. It's a question of this material that is so revealing and so extraordinary. And also, it's an incredible kind of mid-century story.
Well, how did he come to even move into this space?
He wanted out of his home in Croton-on-Hudson and his family, and he put all his stuff in a truck. He had found this place. He liked the fact that it was cheap. He liked the fact, it was really cheap.
Nowadays, of course, people would be leaving that area because it's too expensive and moving to Croton-on-Hudson.
Of course. but even in the 50s, of course, he was moving in the opposite direction. The big move to the suburbs in the 50s, Gene left the suburbs and came to Manhattan. So he was a very contrary fellow as well.
And then he wired the loft with microphones. How did he do that?
He, as a result of having been a photographer for many years, was very mechanically inclined and was very interested in audio tape, which was really just coming into use in the early 50s in America, and not really in much use at all outside of the recording studio.
Did he see this as a project, that he would do photographs and make films and record the musicians?
I wish I could call him and ask him. We don't know. That's one of the... Gene, what were you doing? It's one of the real mysteries for everybody is, he spoke very casually. We can even hear him on the tape saying, I want to do a book, But what are you going to do with 4,000 hours of audio tape in a book? In those days, there was no way to use it.
So where was it for all the years in between?
It was in an archive boxed up. When he died, it went to an archive with everything else. But it was a photo archive. So everybody involved in it and everybody who came to study his work, they were interested in photographs.
They didn't bother listening to the audio tapes.
They didn't bother listening, and they didn't bother opening the boxes until Sam Stevenson walked in and said, "What's over there?" And he happened to be interested in audio, and he happened to be a jazz guy. So he looked at the spines of the tape boxes when they finally opened the carton and saw these famous names, Monk, Zoot, Evans, everybody who played there.
My guest is Sarah Fischko. She has directed a film called The Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith, which is now opening for a theatrical run at the Metrograph. And she will be introducing the film at the 7 p.m. screening at the Metrograph tomorrow night and then taking questions afterward. But right now you're taking questions from me?
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about Thelonious Monk is probably the most, although Zoot Sims is pretty famous, Bill Evans is pretty famous, Thelonious Monk was a huge star at this point. How did he come to do this collaboration with Hall Overton?
Well, he wasn't, he was a huge star a little later, but he wasn't the hugest star at this point, or let's just say he was recovering from a bit of a slump at this point. He had lost his cabaret card, and his appearance in 1959 in the big band concert, which is the event around which his loft involvement centered, was really, a recovery from this period.
Well, let's explain that cabaret card thing. If you were arrested for any reason, you lost a cabaret card, which allowed you to work in a nightclub at that time?
As it's explained to me, the cabaret card was kind of a leftover from World War II to prevent spying in places where people gathered. And that was the idea of it, although there are many layers of meaning behind it, I also understand.
Well, Thelonious Monk wasn't a spy, but many musicians, Jerry Mulligan, for example, because he'd been arrested on a pot charge once, he refused to get a cabaret card because he found it demeaning. But they had to go, and they had to get a clergyman and some other people to vouch for them so they could go back to work, because clubs were where these musicians made most of their living.
Right. Anyway, Monk was recovering from a rather frustrating time, and he wound up in the loft primarily because of Hall Overton. He was basically put together with the extraordinary Hall Overton, who was a Juilliard teacher by day and a kind of jazz guru by night.
And he was living at the loft?
And he was living at the loft. He, too, had a wife in the suburbs and, a lot of them did this. Anyway, he had what he called a studio in the loft where he worked, but I gather he also lived there some of the time.
How long did these people stay at the loft?
Which people?
Well, Smith and Overton, the painter who started the whole thing.
It was a big kind of rotating... one thing we can never figure out is who exactly was at the loft when and which apartment they had. It was a big scene. People came for a couple of years and then left. Some people just, Ronnie Free, the drummer, stayed on Gene Smith's recliner for 2 years and lived there, and then had a drug habit and then tore out of there as fast as he could and left New York. I mean, there's all kinds of dramas and stories.
It must have been a lot of fun trying to figure out who's playing on these tapes. Some of the musicians were probably quite obvious. You can always tell when Thelonious Monk is on piano. Zoot Sims had a very personal sound, but some of the others, that trombone player we began with, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, well, we don't know who that is. That was a party in the loft, and it just has such a nice feel with the chatter in the background. I just thought that's such a wonderful piece of tape. But that was really Sam Stevenson's journey. Was he spent about a dozen years going from jazz musician to jazz musician, saying, "Do you recognize this person? And could that be so and so?" And a lot of the names got filled in that way.
When did it all end?
It ended in the middle of the '60s. It kind of slowed down, and that's really when Gene lost interest in taping. And then in the later '60s, the musicians, the music changed, and a lot of people left. A lot of people couldn't afford to be in Manhattan anymore because that's when things really picked up for Manhattan.
Didn't Salvador Dali visit the Jazz Loft at some point?
He did. He did. There are wonderful pictures of him with Ultraviolet, his then friend.
Uh-huh. And he was just slumming?
He made some kind of presentation there. We don't know much more about it, but that's what I heard from Hall Overton's wife many years ago.
And did W. Eugene Smith... just simply focus on what was going on in the loft at this point, or was he still doing things for Life magazine?
He was still freelancing a bit, although he was clearly obsessed with the loft because he made, he exposed about 45,000 negatives just in that place and on the street. He was fascinated by the window looking out on Sixth Avenue and took many, many pictures of that.
As I said earlier, Sarah Fischko will be introducing this film at the 7 p.m. screening at the Metrograph tomorrow night, the opening night, and then taking questions afterwards. The film is called The Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith. Part grew out of the Jazz Loft Project radio series for WNYC and NPR. And let's listen to a little bit of the music that came out of the loft, the collaboration between Hall Overton and Thelonious Monk. This is from the Town Hall concert.